much. Let's move on to some tips and tricks. So this is pretty free form. This is now we're beginning. I wish I learned this sooner. Part two continued from the currently the most popular talk at Unreal Fest Prague, probably soon to be surpassed by Chris Murphy since his talk just came out a couple of days ago, but I'm enjoying the lead while I have it. Anyone who has a thing they just want to say or a screen share, I've got a bunch lined up if no one has anything handy, but especially for those of us who are in the fellowship and very freshly learning Unreal Engine, what are some things you wish you learned 2 weeks ago or 9 years ago or whatever the case may be?
Do not use OnTick.
Ever? Just never use it at all?
Or just know when to and when not to. It's just so often when I would get help from somebody, especially after following a tutorial on something I wanted to implement in my blueprint, like they would tell me, oh, why is this on tick? Are you sure about this? So that's been my experience. And also just learning the framework early on, just so that you can make your life a little bit easier in the future.
Yeah, let me, we'll try to do this in a way that ends up giving some kind of quick tips. So let me just quickly show, you know, if you did want to disable event tick, you can always check to see if event tick is active, you know, so here it is. If you just have event tick hanging out, it is going to have a non-zero cost. So delete it if you can. Up here in any blueprint, you can also see start with tick enabled. You can disable that. You can enable tick only when you want it and then disable it again. You also have here tick interval in seconds, which means if you don't need to be following the 90 frames per second you're targeting, for example, you could say, you know, for this particular blueprint, it's fine for this thing to happen 10 frames a second. This would be, of course, a tenth of a second, rather than, you know, the full frame rate. And that's fine. And alternatively as well, you can also use a timer. Set and you can do a timer by a function name or by an event. And this would be the kind of thing, kind of like tick, where if you set this to looping, you could say, like, you know, every 2 seconds or something, I want to fire some kind of custom event. And it's, you know, not event tick. And whatever you have coming off of here, you get delegated to over there. And this could be something that, you know, you're starting on begin play. So you're basically saying, once the game starts, every 2 seconds, you know, make this thing happen. And there, you're off to the races. There's my quick yes ending of that. Oh, and also, if you want to see everything in your project that is using event tick, there's a great console command called dump ticks, and it will actually show you everything that is active that is using event tick. And if you want to track them down, that is really handy. That's obviously better to do it play mode. Okay, all done. Who wants to say something?
Are cool kids still using timelines as ticks these days, or like what's the latest hack?
My understanding with timelines is they're a little bit dangerous because they create like a separate process or something. Like timelines are great. Basically, it's like a little mini sequencer that says, where's my timeline? It's a little mini sequencer where you can like have a thing happening over a certain amount of time. And even if this is firing off a custom event or on begin play, it's going to play everything in here. So for example, maybe we want to have a float value that goes over 5 seconds from 0 to 1. So, you know, 0, 0, and then we add another key and this goes to 1 over 5 seconds. And then you can start to play with like Bezier curves and things like that. This can also be a thing that plays, and then you can do whatever you want with that float value. For example, I could be lerping, you know, from one location to another. I could be changing a material parameter, whatever the case may be. I used to use timelines all the time. Then I think someone at Epic said, be careful with that. That can also slow your game down significantly.
I'll jump in with a very, very early rudimentary. I wish I had known this sooner. The really understand what like your references do and how the engine is stringing them together and or when to update them in various folders or anything. For me, it's basically every time I do anything, I'm going to double check and update the references. And then especially if you're like renaming things, moving things, like anything like that, you will, and if you delete a folder, can be prepared to break your reference chain. But then also free file sync, not that they're paid or have you know, advertisements or anything like that, but free file sync definitely saved my backups, because the autosave feature will only get you back so far. And if you, like, I basically back up every session, the beginning and end of it, just to make sure. That way, if, you know, push comes to shove, I even have those autosaves available. And the other thing, the last thing of that is, to piggyback onto that, is make sure that you really, really have your methodology for how you're going to name files, or the different blueprints or anything like that, so that it's easy to find. And also so you don't accidentally, like, copy and paste something and then give yourself a massive memory leak that you can no longer open Unreal because you've done that, you know. So those are my big ones that would have saved me about a week probably during the fellowship if I had known that.
Yeah, those are all great. And Matt's mentioning in the chat that float interpolate, probably float interpolate 2 on Tick is a good one. Yeah, all the interpolate nodes are fantastic because you're basically saying do a dampened version of going from here to here. So let's say the example I always use, of course, is virtual reality. You don't necessarily want to see exactly what someone's seeing in VR because it might make you motion sick because there's all this like little judder. If you were doing, for example, a vector interpolate to getting that position or that rotation or whatever the case may be, rather than getting like every little judder, you'd get this kind of dampened, smoother version of what's happening there. And there's many situations where you might want something like that, a menu or a character that's following you. So all of the blank interpolate twos are really useful. Float, vector, rotation, spring component, all sorts of fun stuff there.
Yeah, and they're on, you, even Epic puts them on Tick if it's for like a pawn. I mean, you don't put like everything on it, but like that's usually Tick. And then I usually take control rig, like that drives a control rig parameter that has like more control rig interpolates after it. So it's like you dampen your inputs almost always, you know, and then you have control rig like do the secondaries and stuff like that. Like, I think even Epic still drives most of their pawn stuff like on Tick like that.
Yeah. And going back real quick to the Rudy's note about naming things consistently, even though it's not an official Epic thing, most people at Epic still also highly recommend the Allar, A-L-L-A-R, UE5 style guide, which just gives you a naming convention you can follow for just about everything you could do in Unreal. And so I know Corey Williams, of course, very, very organized with how he puts together those projects, helps with his lucid dreaming. It's nice to have those conventions that you know you're going to follow.
Yeah, to add to that, as I say, that was my number one thing is naming conventions. Like for myself, I started out in Unity, and it's very, very important to have naming conventions with Unity. But in Unreal, it seems to be a little different. But more so than having your own pipelines, you know, very strong, it's being able to work with other people and being able to help other people with whatever they're working on. If you're like, hey, can you help me with this? And you bring them in and everything is called test 1, test 5 ARB, like that doesn't help you. Having actual naming conventions, man, that's everything for me. Like, I love it. Right, that's it. That's pretty much my main thing.
It's a good one. Who else has got one?
You guys talk about soft references? Oh, you go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Matt.
No, you go ahead. I talked a lot. You go ahead.
I think for me, it was like being okay with not having a perfect product at the end of this. I was beating myself up that I didn't have this incredible game that I was going to come up with. I was like, I want to have 5 levels and I'm going to have all these abilities. I ended up with 1 level, you know, and no abilities for right now. And I think you have to kind of be okay with that when you first start.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Don't start with your dream project. Don't do that. Do the thing, like, understand how you're going to construct a thing and organize it, and, you know, measure twice, cut once kind of thing, because there could have been a lot of opportunities where I could have saved time by watching the whole video before starting to mess with the blueprints and then understanding where I wanted to go with it. That's probably a big one.
One of the other mentors or TAs had mentioned that they kind of like the idea potentially for a future fellowship of basically getting everyone to make as much stuff as possible for the first week, but also like really encouraging people to not use any of that after the first week. Like that's your chance to have a bunch of spaghetti code and just go with God and make a bunch of stuff. But then, of course, you're going to learn so much about better ways to do that, that it's going to be a lot easier to just go back and build it from scratch for the second week. So making that part of the process, instead of making you feel like, oh, I got to go back and redo this, this is so terrible, might benefit some people.
Another one I just remember too that was really big for me early on is learn to identify feature creep.
Yes.
Like if you can identify feature creep, and if like the name says what it is, but if you don't know what feature creep is, it's when you start adding in little features that don't make massive difference to the game. And you spend more time trying to figure out how to make that refrigerator door open just right when people are like, just open the door so I can see what's inside. Mm-hmm. You know, so really, if you start getting into little details, ask yourself, is this going to impact the overall quality of this project in such a way that this time is worth spending?
I way overbuilt my AI behavior trees and then didn't even have AI.
Not yet, but you will.
I custom built a rig in Blender and tried to put it in Unreal, and it was very unhappy. So I wish I knew to export the mannequin first into Blender and try to use that rig. But it was pretty hard to animate with that rig, if I must say so. But I did find a really useful add-on to help me transfer the animations from my custom rig onto the game-ready rig. So I just wish I knew that way before I started animating.
Can you round trip a skeleton from Unreal to Blender and back now? Does that work?
Yeah, you can do that.
Technically.
Like the bones always come out like sideways and like great, like insane looking. They have like a better pipeline for that now.
A little bit.
I think if you went straight the skeleton back over to the same skeleton, that should work round trip. I would assume. I mean, because you're not taking the meta rig from Blender, which would be a completely different skeleton.
Just always had a horrible time trying to get animation like stuff into Blender and back. Like the skeletons in Blender are just like great. Like,
I'll link you an add-on. It's free, but donate if you can, because it really helps me.
I use Maya. Maya works. Works really well for the rigging side.
I see.
Don't be afraid of the rigging. Just get in there and like, it's really not as complicated as it looks. Like you see all those bones and all the spines and connections that you got to do, but it's a lot of it is actually like just almost like copying over or like assigning it. It's a click one, shift, move down, do it. Like it's really not as complicated. And then you can get in there and play with the character and just make sure their poses when you're getting the animations to sync are the same. Take your time. Take the time to sit there and like make sure that the pose looks right to you. Otherwise, you'll end up with like a character with really slumped shoulders and then need to pixelate them so they don't look so deformed.
Yeah. You could look into free rigging software as well, like
I want to make sure we have the recording of this great XKCD thing. Go ahead, Corey.
Sure. Yeah, I would say there's AccuRig. So AccuRig it's free from Reillusion. I think AccuRig Pro, you can look it up on Google, but you can download that and quickly throw in a static mesh that's in whatever pose you want, place where the bones are, and it'll spit out a rig that you can use as a base. So you don't have to use the Reillusion suite. You can just use that. You can bring it into Blender. You can bring it into Maya if you're not good at that or any of that, or you can bring it straight into Unreal and just go. Yeah, so. Handy for like, you know, little quick background stuff I do with the kids all the time. You know, I don't need to spend a billion years on it.
Yeah. And the Mixamo auto rigger is still like pretty popular. I know like all the UEFN people use that a lot.
It is.
On that note, I think some people do have a tendency to try to see how much they can treat Unreal Engine as a one-stop shop and only do things in Unreal Engine. But as we're kind of alluding to here, there are a lot of really useful third-party tools or other software that can really enhance a workflow. So just curious if anyone else wants to throw out anything they use that isn't explicitly made by Epic Games that they like to use.
I am everything Reillusion. I'm a Reillusion freak, like not being paid by them. I'm just like, that's my pipeline. I don't have a background in 3D. Like I honestly have not been doing this for very long. I started doing this Unreal. I never even touched Unreal until the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was my quick way to get to where I'm at now is through the Realism pipeline. And now I'm like, I love it. So yeah.
And Flo just mentioned the Game Rig Tools Blender add-on. Game ready rigs in seconds.
Yeah.
That's great.
Very, very useful. Highly recommend.
We'll try to do quick little screen shares to show anything that we post about.
That's scary though, to base your skeleton workflow on some like premium plugin that like may not get updated, and it's scary. But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, honestly. I feel so lucky to have found this add-on. Otherwise I couldn't get my little froggies to do a little booty twerk.
You just get it in Unreal. They have skeleton tools now.
Yeah, it's a little daunting to me, though.
I'm curious if anyone's been playing with the motion design, motion graphics tools yet, and if anyone feels like that's on their way to replacing what they'd otherwise be doing in Cinema 4D, After Effects, Nuke, whatever. We might still actually get Winbush dropping by later on as another special guest, so we'll see what he thinks about that.
Yeah, I was doing a talk on that, on the motion graphics.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, fantastic.
I will say that I appreciate the way that like sequencer and stuff works, coming from, you know, using a lot of Premiere or DaVinci in some of those areas. Like it's actually not as intimidating. I mean, I feel like that's also like a blanket statement for Unreal, is it's not as intimidating as it is. When you get in there and you start to even just take some YouTube videos and look through those things, don't let your fear stop you from playing around and experimenting. You're not going to break your computer. If you break the engine, you can always delete it and put it back in. You know, like there's, but I did not start, and I thought that I would be able to get away with not needing to be able to be in the engine as a narrative individual. But I wanted to have that empathy for other people. I wanted to be able to get that connection. But I allowed the ambiguity to dissuade me from getting into it. So if anybody's listening to this and they're like, well, that's great that you have all these like tips of what I wish I had known. The base one, the very first one to get over, is that like, it's not that big a deal. Like you can get in there, you can learn it. It's really not going to be that challenging. And you don't want to wait until you're in a 4-week, you know, solo dev game jam project where you have to put something out at the end of it to know that. You know, so what I wish I had known about Unreal is that the sooner you start, the sooner you get into it.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, I think there are a few of the cohorts who actually did some homework before jumping into the fellowship. Like did some beginner tutorials, and I felt like I would have benefited from that as well.
I did environment stuff first, and it obviously shows in like the way that my level design looks, the way I, you know, put everything together, the way that
that doesn't amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I sent Alex the link for it if you want to play on the thing, but also like anything that does intimidate you, there's usually some other little bit there. Like I knew that I wouldn't be able to really like the level the way I wanted to with the amount of time that I had to dedicate to it. And so I ended up lighting the entire level with emissives. Literally everything is done with emissives. And it actually really added to the tone and the look of it, because there's so many great shadows, or like things only move a certain distance. And those particle effects give their own light. So you can just be very mindful and actually rather sparse with what you put in there. And you don't have to sit there and endlessly tinker with like how that directional is going to go or whatever. You can just use the emissives to light that certain area a certain way, and they keep moving, and you can alt drag those to make more.
Quick PSA on emissives. They do tend to add a lot of GI noise. I love emissives too. I like to make glowing balls that fly around levels and make cool stuff. They do still seem to have some issues with Lumen. I'll also just mention briefly while we're on it, point lights. Some people think they're the most expensive lights. rectangular or, you know, area lights, more expensive because they are actually made up of a bunch of little point lights. Spotlight, not too bad, just pointing in one direction. Directional light, not too bad. Just when you think about cost. Also, highly recommend people check out the light mixer, which is a feature I was requesting in Unreal Engine for years, because I was using it in 3ds Max since like 2007, where you literally just get, here's all the lights in your scene. And if you want to change the color of any of them or change the mobility, because for some reason, even if you're doing a Lumen Nanite project, you will often still get lights that come in as stationary. No idea why that's still happening in 5.4. And so it's very easy to say, oh yeah, here's my lights. If you are still doing baking, you know, you can very quickly turn them into static lights if you want to, or stationary. And if you're like, I'm all Lumen, all Nanite all the time, change them all to movable. Quick lighting PSA. Anyone else?
Yeah, I was going to add, I found that I could decouple things really well as soon as I started leaning into the interfaces and the components more. Basically, to the point where anytime I'm finding myself dragging a pin off that's like cast to, I'm like, wait, I could probably don't need to do that. And that feels like a really big deal. And it feels like it's been paying off huge this last week, where I've been able to implement things in no time. I've got five times as many like different power-ups now than I had before.
Yeah. Matt made an allusion earlier very quickly to soft references. Matt, would you like to tell us why soft references are important?
Also, comps and interfaces is life, like full life, like yeah. Never use inheritance. It's like the biggest trap unless you really, like really, really need to. It's such a super trap. My whole life is like components and interfaces right now doing that correctly. But yeah, as your game gets bigger, anytime you reference something directly, that gets loaded at runtime. And I did not know that in the beginning. And I didn't know what soft references were. And I added metahumans to my game. And I had a data table that had like 10 different metahumans in it, all with hard references. And it was like, oh, we're crashing. We're just like hundreds of people would be like, yep, this just full crashes my game. Like, what's going on? And so anytime you like can reference hard, you should definitely switch it to the soft reference, load it at runtime. Data tables full of hard references, like the worst thing you could ever do to your game. And that's like what I did. I think after like the second year my game was out, I just had like one massive hard reference data table. And, that'll ruin things. So if you design with soft references and comps and interfaces, you're like, decouple everything. Like never reference like anything directly if you can. Never cast, etc.
We have a request from EC in the chat if we can talk a little bit more about components and interfaces. I'll do a really quick screen share on components. And then if anyone wants to show an example of interfaces, I don't want to hog the screen share at all. This is from the I Wish I Learned This Sooner Prague level, which was built by the Agile Lens team. And there's a good little exhibit we have here on components where we basically just have some shapes here. And the idea, of course, about components is it's a very easy way to just add a thing to any object that is then going to have a certain behavior or interactivity. VR template, for example, has a grab component. Anything you drag, or not even drag, if you literally just add grab component to different objects in your scene, it will now be an object that you can grab. Here we've got a scale pulse component, and then we've got a spin only scale pulse and just a crazy demo one. Any of these could be deleted or adjusted. And here we've got a spin only one. So if I were to press play here, you see that we're getting like the behaviors of those different components in a very modular way without using any kind of hard references. And then if I've got a bunch of objects that are using any of these components, like say I decide this spin only component is a little bit too wild or crazy, we can see that all it's doing here on event tick is adding some relative rotation. It's multiplying it by 300. If I were to go and change that to 30, you know, reduce it by a factor of 10, and then I go back and I press play, we'd see that the spinning is much slower now. And, you know, then I'm also later on like, oh my God, I'm using event tick too much with these components. Again, I could change the event tick method for that one component and it affects anything else that uses that. So it's very modular. Would anyone like to talk a little more about interfaces?
Sure. I have at least an example I can speak to that I basically just did. I was applying a power up where you could freeze time around an area. And so I just put like a, can you do that function in an interface? And you can now just call that on any actor. So basically that let me have a very generic volume that just looks for on overlap. As soon as on overlap happens, it calls that on the actor that it overlapped. And that's it. Now, if I want it to actually work, I just go add that function interface to anyone who wants to sort of subscribe to the ability to be frozen. And that was just super, super simple because I had a root type that most of my movable objects were children of. And so then that was effectively trivial to implement.
Yeah. I'll share one example here too about interfaces and the event dispatcher. And then as long as we're talking about soft references, want to shout out a quick thing related to that. Let me find where we've got our... Here we go. So here's event dispatcher. And so here, event dispatcher is great if you want to just be sending out a message to basically whoever wants to hear it. And you can also bind things even at runtime to work with different things. So here, bind hub array event to make fire whenever we click one of these. And so we're in runtime still, and I can unbind that, and then it's no longer creating the fire effect. Over here, we have interfaces, and this is a little bit more like, you know, you want something that's going to be interacting consistently, and you usually can't change this at runtime, but anytime one of these is interacting with these other objects, they can receive that event and respond to it in different ways. So there's a quick example of that. And very briefly, while I'm sharing my screen, when we think about soft references, the one thing you want to be careful of is it can be a little bit difficult if you're cleaning up your project later on to find where the bloat is, because the references are usually where you can see where there's things that you don't need. Like there's some really useful filters here, especially if you go down into other filters. Shout out to Ryan Laley, who like got me to really pay attention to these more, like not used in any level, not used in any asset. And you might do this not used in any level thing, but not realize that some of these are connected to other things, but in a soft reference kind of way. Sometimes they are caught by here, but you could end up deleting something that actually was being used in a less direct way by other things. However, if you're in a all hard references all the time kind of workflow, this is actually a pretty safe place to start to find things that you can actually delete to clean up your project. The other thing too that's useful about some of these other filters is there's one that you'll also see in UEFN. I know we're not talking about UEFN today, but unsupported, really helpful if you're migrating an Unreal Engine project over to UEFN, because things like material functions and blueprints and various things that UEFN just doesn't know what to do with, you can do that and then just see whatever assets are coming up and you know that you need to delete those. Because last time I checked, UEFN just like won't work if there's unsupported Unreal Engine things coming out.
Don't do that. Do not migrate. I mean, there's so many things that are not supported by Valkyrie right now. It's like, they know. I tell them like every single time I find new ones, like, but it's like, they, it's just not, doesn't even, like animation to UEFN is just like this. I mean, it's like, okay, but it's, yeah. You're going to find every single asset. It's like a no, like every single one sock is going to get rejected. You definitely don't want
to
do that.
Yeah.
And may I share something about my usage of interface, Alex?
Sure.
Yeah. Let me share my screen. Like, I literally encountered this problem yesterday. I was drafting a question. I know the fellowships is over, but I was hoping some TI would answer my questions. So I drafted this graph. My problem is that I have a different classes of dinosaur, right? Different skeletons completely, but the bipeds and the quadrupeds, and each of them has a different animation blueprint. And then I spawn and attach my riders dynamically to the dino skater. And then the riders, I want to use control rig in the animation blueprint to trigger the secondary animation as well. So I have at least four animation blueprint for different players and AI in my game. And the way that I'm go about it is I want the rider to use the movement, the vehicle movement that the user input into the skater, so that I can use that vehicle input to drive the animation of the riders. So the riders are as a ragdoll. I can do that with theoretically that can be done with a rigid body, but I want I'm not proficient with physics and such, and also I want to have more granular control with the rider's animation. So that's why I didn't choose the physics approach, but I use the control rig in the animation blueprint for the riders. So the way I do it, right before I figured out the interface thing, I had a hard time imagining how to reuse this logic. So from the writer, I can get the only actor and then the attached parent to get to the anime instance of the dinosaur skater. But then I have to do the setup blueprint twice. If I didn't use an interface and so my questions yesterday that I about to roll to the TA was that how can I not cast to this concrete and specific animation blueprint A or B, but still being able to reuse this logic in my animation blueprint C and D. And the way I solve it is I didn't have to cast at all. I cast to some interface that implement an interface. And then that's like solved in a heartbeat. And that was a epiphany that animation blueprint can implement interface as well. And that solved my problem of like having to cast to concrete classes. Yeah. So that's my personal application.
Excellent. Love the diagram. What application did you use to draw this in? Mischief?
Oh yeah, Mischief. That's Mischief.
Never used it. Yeah. All right. Who else has got a good one?
That kind of reminded me of something I've discovered recently. I'm curious if you guys have gotten into this because it's a bit of a double-edged sword, but I've been using AI a bunch for helping me just instead of going to Google, I just go to ChatGPT as far as like Unreal questions. Sometimes it's just totally wrong and you're telling it it's wrong. It's like, yeah, I'm wrong. And then you finally get there. But I've also been using it for, because I like write a lot of tools for just helping me with sequencer or automating my workflow. And so sometimes it's Blueprint, sometimes it's Python. And I found that like Claude, which I forget, I don't know if that's Google's or who makes Claude, but Claude is actually really good at Blueprints and Python. So you can get it to like, you can give it an obscure thing, like I need to animate this thing or do this thing. And you just tell it what you want in Unreal and you say, give me blueprints or give me a few different ways of how to approach it. And it'll just give you some really legitimate starting points and then you can keep drilling down. So it's helped me like a ton and it saved me a lot of time with writing these tools. But like I said, it's, and I'm curious if you guys are using it, but sometimes it'll be like, yeah, do this. And you know, you go here and you'll find this. And I'm like, no, that feature is not there. And then it's like, oh yeah, you're right. And so, but it is, I think it's really powerful and it's my go-to thing right now, instead of going to the docs or Google.
I'll second that just real fast. Cause I got a hop, but, Claude has been by far the most responsive. You still have to remind it pretty consistently which version of Unreal I've noticed. And yeah, you do have to tell it it's wrong quite a bit, or like, that's not an option or blah, blah, blah. I mean, as you said, it's like, oh yeah, my bad. Here, try this. But you know, you can kind of troubleshoot it. And a lot of it comes down to, I think as somebody else was saying earlier about the way you talked Unreal, it's very simpler about like knowing how to prompt it appropriately for what you need it to do. And I think especially when you're in a small dev environment, it can be really helpful for you to help create the placeholder assets and things that you need just to get past that hurdle. And then you can always come back and address it in a more humane avenue. I definitely think it's something that we as developers can embrace for that level of it ethically, for sure.
Hmm. And if nothing else, it's always the rubber duck, just a chance to talk through something. All right. Anyone else have a thing they want to share? I've got one queued up for a very easy way to replace any game character with a metahuman. You want to see that real quick? Okay, this is pretty fast. This is only going to work with a metahuman, though. I think there should be a way to basically copy this logic to any character, including, say, like character creator. Or any of the real illusion stuff. Also, reminder that metahumans don't always need to be like more photorealistic. Like this is kind of an uncanny valley version of my My 9-year-old, this is a more stylized character I've been using for other things. Still a metahuman, follows all the blend shapes. When you do make a more stylized metahuman, make sure that you consider the fact that the eyes are not going to be able to change size unless you go into Maya and start to play with more stuff over there. But as of, I think, 5.4, there's a cool little thing that you get. This little live retarget mode. And so this is the new game animation sample. So if I press play here and we're just, you know, using the normal pawn in the normal game, I accidentally am using my converted character already. So let me go ahead and delete this guy and delete this guy. We'll also just get some of our RAM back. And over in my default pawn class, let's go character one. And in my sandbox character, I'll just go ahead and delete what I just did so I can walk you through it. So any character, this could be the third person template. This could be anything at all. Let's make sure that it's using the right pawn. You're right there. I got to turn the visibility back on. Sorry, I thought I had this all prepped. Visible. Okay, so this is what it would look like if you just had, you know, this template open by default or whatever, right? You know, you got your guy. He does all of his cool motion matching stuff, and that's all great. Now you're like, oh, but I got a metahuman character ready to go that I want to replace this with. So this used to be a little bit complicated. You used to have to copy over all the different components and whatnot from your metahuman into your character and deal with some retargeting potentially. Now, assuming that the animations and the body skeleton are going to be pretty close, this is incredibly simple now. So you can open up your character, pretty much any character at all that's set up and running. And as long as you've got kind of a parent mesh, what we can do is we can go and grab a metahuman. And by the way, quick tip, you can drag any blueprint into another blueprint as kind of a child blueprint. So here's the metahuman blueprint in here. And if I go to my viewport, you'll see right now they're like not really matching. And by the way, because this came up a lot in the fellowship, if you're ever like, man, I'm watching someone do a thing, but all the text looks really tiny and I wish it was bigger, over in debug mode, there's a thing over here called widget reflector. And if you start to increase the scale of things here, you'll notice it, you know, vastly changes the resolution of what you're seeing here. So I'm on a 2560 by 1440 resolution monitor. But if I want to keep that sharpness, but make sure it's easier to read what I'm doing, I can do that in the widget reflector. So over here, I've got this as a child. I need to kind of recorrect this. So you want to zero all this out. Sometimes this will come in a little bit too high or rotated 90 degrees. So make sure that's correct. And then clicking on your metahuman down here, all we need to do is find that use live retarget mode. And you'll notice that we're already pretty close. Like obviously the height is different, but we're already starting to match this. And assuming that you're okay having both of these together, you could say, I'm done. And it's pretty much going to work. Assuming you do want to hide this, there's a couple steps to this. Not only do you need to turn the visibility off, there's one more step because I'll show you what happens if this is all we do. Looks fine over here, but if I now go and hit play now, it's working because I once again left something on. By default, this won't work. You'll see it moving around, but all the animations won't be there. And the thing you need to make sure you do is make sure you go into the pawn and you need to find under optimization for mesh, by default, you're going to have this. It'll probably just say always tick pose. You need to make sure that dropdown says to refresh bones. So I'll show you how it should have looked. It was a little bit broken. So you'd get this where you see your character, but then yeah, you're just kind of sliding around. So it's not doing that refresh bones on event tick. All you need to do then to make it work is find that drop down and tell it to refresh bones. And then you are good to go. And you could, you know, swap out your characters at runtime, change clothing, change whatever. You can change things in that blueprint itself, and it's all going to carry over into your pawn, which is pretty cool. Optimization in there. Always tick pose and refresh bones. And then once again, you know, this is working. And once more, just a reminder that this would work in any kind of game setup you might have. Play. There we are. Yes. And this is where you get all the README stuff. So yeah, you know, the animation retargeting might not be perfect, but in many cases it is good enough, or at least a good starting point. et cetera, et cetera. Okay, there we go. There's my quick tip for getting some character to work in other contexts. Live retarget. Cool. Thanks, Wit. Awesome. All right, let's do, let's say three more. Three more UE tips and we'll call it a night. Who's got one?
Well, I've got, I'm going to jump off, but I wanted to just say one more thing before I go, because like,
this is
where my heart is. You already know this. The biggest thing about everything you learn is that you need to know why you're doing it. Like, you need to remember why you're doing it. It's not just like, hey, here's a cool thing I can do to make some money. Yes, that's true. You could, and maybe you will not. Maybe it's an art thing, but no matter what it is, always have your why in mind. I know this for myself personally. I recently, I went through a burnout, and I realized that my burnout was caused because I deviated from my why. Was I lost track of what my why truly was. And no matter how much you know or how good you think you are, if you lose that why, you lose yourself, and that knowledge is useless. If it doesn't serve you right, you know. So no matter how hard things get, if you know your why, you know your purpose, what you're doing and why you're doing this, those hard things are just building you, are making you better, making you stronger. But if you start finding yourself going, what the heck? Take a break and think about why are you doing this, so it makes it worth your time. Because that's arguably the most important thing, if anything you're going to do in Unreal Engine, is starts with you and how you can create. So that's all I've got. Don't forget your why.
Well said. Thank you for that, Corey.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for everything you do in the community. And great to meet you, everybody.
Yeah. Thanks, Corey. Cheers.
Bye.
Corey.
I got a free tip that's going to upset at least two people on this call, which is don't build tools. because I think that, I mean, this goes back to that XKCD cartoon about automation, but more about, especially when you're a beginner, I came into Unreal with a programming background already. And so my immediate reaction to getting into a piece of software is to want to know all the different ways you plug into it. And like, you know, C++ side, now obviously Python, blueprints, all these things. You want to know how to do, you know, all those things. And you want to be able to, oh, hey, what if I want to like make my own menu? Or it gives you so much flexibility. But I can say from my personal experience, I've gone down so many rabbit holes around building tools that have prevented me from finishing projects that I personally look back as like, wow, I really wish I had just kind of gotten over the finish line, because I don't use that tool anymore. You know, like it was a one and done. And I know personally I get obsessed with tools and the DevOps and all those other things. So definitely for beginners out there who maybe you're coming from, maybe you're coming from other software or used to a specific way like that software does something, invest in figuring out what's like the streamlined way that Epic has already thought about this for you to do that thing. And if you're going to do that a bunch and you realize, hey, this is not working for me, then maybe think about, you know, figuring out how to do tools. But I can say again, personally, like as much as I love building tools, I feel like I have not been able to do as much creative work inside of Unreal as I wish.
Thanks, Jacob. I think that's a very invaluable advice. But I have a question for you. During the fellowship, I think two of the fellows advised me in the same vein that you just mentioned as well. And I think that's applied to me so much that they told me to not over engineering things, and they asked me to just throw spaghetti at the wall and get things done. But sometimes you as a programmer, you can even envision like how things would be very hard to expand if you wouldn't refactor things now. So how would you balance that, like trying to organize things and then just let things messy and finish things?
My philosophy around this is like, if I am interested in like I refactor things all the time. I actually enjoy refactoring things. I know we were talking about this earlier, like, okay, throw it out and start over. I actually kind of enjoy that process. But I like doing it in a restrained context. So like what I will do is I'll start a new test project and just figure out the five ways I could do that one thing. And then if in the end I decide it's worth it to like go back and like redo everything, then yeah, maybe I'll consider it. But trying to scope it down as much and just figure out like with interfaces or like what we're talking about, blueprints or the different ways to do tick, you know, like or events inside of Unreal, like figure out the five different ways you could do it in as small scope as possible in a constrained environment. You're not going to break it. You're not going to have to start, you know, over again. I think that's always a good way to approach. And I mean, any programming project. The other thing is look at the marketplace. Like chances are someone else has probably already thought of this, and like, look at the Unreal marketplace, look at the community. And if there's a tool that's going to solve your problem and it's $5, just like, you know, you're going to spend more on, you're going to spend more on like the Starbucks coffee to keep you awake to build the tool. Like just take a little every once. Like, I think engineers have a lot of pride and I appreciate that. But every once in a while, you just got to let someone else solve your problems for you.
Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Yeah, I agree. Like engineers usually have that pride, like to be the first one and not to be the I try to we are the one that solve the problem. But yeah, thanks for the advice. That's very helpful.
We haven't had a rebuttal to a tip yet. I'm curious.
Somebody's got a little tiny piece. My mildly defensive thing to that is it's not pride. I don't want to integrate 30 different things. They're not going to work together well. It's like never going to happen. But your overall point, great, right? Like, yeah, spend a little bit of money instead of a bunch of your own sanity and your entire project timeline for the thing. Like, pick a hill to die on, though, right? Don't do it for every little thing you need, because then you're just fighting the edges between things instead of any actual work. But I will also say, just going and seeing what people have done that they're selling also tells you what's possible, right? Like someone did it. So, okay, there's something you can do.
I feel like Matt at least has to have a hot take about this.
I have to dumb everything down so I understand it. Like, have you ever tried to get through gas?
Or what?
Have you ever tried to set up like the gas system?
Gameplay ability system?
Oh, yeah.
Or like try to recreate Lyra from scratch, which I tried many, many, many times to rebuild Lyra like for my project and use like the way that they set up like the, you don't have to load all the animations at once for like the entire. And that thing is massive. I've tried so many times to like rebuild it. And it's just like, I look at these like the city sample from like Unreal Engine. It's like, I'm not going to build that. You know what I mean? So I have to like build my own from scratch usually so that I understand it. So the future me in a year could possibly even try to understand it, let alone someone else's code. But I'm not used to like coding in groups either, where I have to like work with other people's frameworks. It's like, I write everything. So it has to be done very simply. And it's usually like this like very linear progression of like complexity versus like something from like Epic or from the marketplace sometimes that just may be like way past like any sort of like, you know, coding framework I'm used to, where, you know, any patterns that I can understand. So I usually have to dumb it down for myself. But
piggybacking off what Matt just said too, I keep forgetting where people are positioned in relation to me. Make tutorials, share things with the community, give talks, do it selfishly, do it for yourself, because inevitably 2 years from now, you will have completely forgotten that workflow. And it's okay. It's not narcissistic to go watch an old talk or whatever that you gave to reteach yourself something that you've forgotten. No one can hold in their brain all the different things you can do with Unreal Engine. So you need some of these ways to remind yourself sometimes.
What's your current way of stopping the metahuman head from disconnecting when you play a face animation? What's your current technique?
Yeah, right now I'm doing it mostly in Control Rig, which is pretty different from the like 30-minute video I made a year ago. I need to make an updated one because it changes with every version of Unreal. Corey, have you messed with that at all? Yeah, go ahead.
One keyframe to fix it.
Well, there's the keyframe that does head control. I think it's literally head control. That still becomes a problem if you are trying to do it at runtime. Anyway, that's a whole other discussion.
This, Matt, you're talking about the head disconnecting?
Yeah.
People have trouble with that, but there's like, And people asked that to through lateral at the last GDC, and they were like, it's not a problem. That was the answer. Like, that's not a problem. But it's like number. So I'm interested in like what your current take is on that.
Yeah.
Corey, what do you say?
It's a big fucking problem. It sucks. It drives me nuts. The only way I've been able to get around it, short of reloading the level and reloading the sequence, is just go into a simulation mode. Mm-hmm. But then that has its own caveats. It's annoying, but it's
a healthy
way I've been able to deal with it.
It's the head in a BP. You need to keyframe use blueprint and use the head blueprint because there's a default slot on it. And so if that ever changes, then all the logic won't fire that says like the copy body pose won't work. But the way that it's set up, the head blueprint has a default slot to play the animations in. So people like disable blueprint, or they'll change it to animation mode, or they'll leave it in custom. None of those will work. You have to keyframe it down. So I've been doing a lot of MetaHuman like sequences and like stuff like at runtime and for sequencer. It's one keyframe.
And that works consistently for you?
Yeah, it can't be custom. It'll try to switch to custom. Unreal Engine says that if you set an animation blueprint,
lying,
and then you go to sequencer, that it shouldn't switch to custom if a class is there, but it does. You have to keyframe it down. I've been doing like a lot of that lately for runtime, for like shipping. And also for like, you know, animating too. But the animation blueprint for the face has it built in.
Matt, please make a short video or something so we can share that far and wide.
Yeah, I sent it to someone recently and theirs is working now.
Yeah, a lot of people would be really happy about that trick. I'm going to go in. I feel like I've done that before, but I'm going to go and do that as soon as we get off here because this has been driving me nuts for a long time. So
yeah, it's not intuitive. Like if you haven't opened up the face animation blueprint, that you would use an animation blueprint when I'm going to put an animation on it. You think it would be like an animation asset, right? But that definitely will not work. You have to go through like the slot, the default slot on the head blueprint, because the head blueprint's firing all the post-process stuff too. But it's like...
Matt, by any chance, do you have a project open with that example?
No, but I could make one. I'm probably going to, for my talk, I'll probably chuck that in there. There's a lot of checkbox MetaHuman stuff that if you don't do, it's like, nope, won't work.
Yeah,
not work. It's a bunch. There's a lot of them.
That's really funny. All right. Last few UE tips. Corey, do you have a good one for us?
Geez. I mean, I've literally been sitting here thinking, I'm like, I have done so much over the years and I had my VR game and now I'm doing Xanadu. I'm like, I can't even... If anyone asked me a question, I could instantly answer anything. But as far as like, I'm like, what's a tip even look like? You know, I mean, I know what a tip looks like, but they don't come to me in that way. But if anyone had a question about any of that stuff, I could definitely throw something out there.
What version of Unreal Engine do you use?
That's a good one.
That's a funny question because I just... literally had a heart attack. I upgraded Xanadu to 5.4.3 yesterday, and it's been a shit show. It's all
yeah. Yeah.
Only to realize that it was fine the whole time. So yeah, I've been on 5.3. Now I'm on 5.4.3 or whatever the latest one is.
Brave. Very brave.
Yeah. Well, it's part of it's because I'm doing this workshop and they're dead set on being on 5.4. I've been wanting to do it anyway because it's like I'm doing the latest episode I'm on. I'm doing a lot of rendering with the
passes.
Not with passes, but I think they upgraded the path tracer, and so it's just faster. I just have a lot of scenes to get through.
It has additive control rig now in 5.4. You can't use 5.3 for like
yeah. But I've been using additive control rig in 5.3 too.
Yeah. Oh, did they add it then? I skipped my project from 5.2 to 5.4, so I didn't have it for like my entire time until I switched.
Yeah, no, it's in there. I think it's a little bit different how you turn it on, but it's...
Okay. The constraints are still kind of scuffed. Sorry, like a tiny bit in 5.0, but they said it's going to hopefully be fixed by 5.5.
Yeah, the constraints have always been a little tough. That's actually another thing that I'm hoping is better because I have a lot of constraint stuff that I have to do with like hands-on stuff. And
yeah, they like reset all the time. I like showed them like a bunch of MetaHuman ones I was doing and they're like, it's like, constraint go away. It just like doesn't work after a while, but they know about it.
How do you talk? Do you have like a direct line with certain people where when you run into stuff?
If I tweet it, they see it. Or if I LinkedIn it, they...
Oh, that's smart. That's the way to do it. Yeah. So you just make a little video of the problem and you put it up there?
Pretty much, yeah. And then usually someone I know there will like DM me or something and be like, this is like, they're like, we know it's like getting fixed and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
Corey, really quick. I remember one of the early Xanadu videos was showing the difference between Blue pre-metahuman and then converting him into a metahuman. Is Blue still a metahuman? And what about the other characters?
Well, that was, I don't know if you remember that episode, but he only got to like 80%.
That's right. Yeah.
So he's meta at the, when I did that, his body became metahuman skeleton. So it got all those twist correctives and then his texture maps derived from metahuman. So that was the big elevation. His face never made it to a metahuman back then because it was pre all the tools that can do it very easily now. So I had like, I was spending months trying to get that converted over. But now I actually have a Blue version that is fully metahuman, but still running into all kinds of interesting stuff. I don't know if you guys want to jump off or if you want to see something really interesting really fast, but it's been a trick. Blue has been a trick. I've upgraded a lot. I've done a lot with metahumans over the last few months, and I love it. I've been using Mesh Morpher to create them. But Blue has been a fucking challenge because I'm so familiar with him because of his expressions and the way the AR kit just looks. And then when I converted him to a metahuman, depending on which way I do it, he just looks like either a guy painted up to look like Blue or like another Uncanny Valley. So it's been a challenge to get the Blue, all the metahuman facial animation shapes to match Blue's shapes. On top of the fact that metahuman animator is so good at it, picks up all my sort of asymmetry in my face and applies it to Blue, which makes him look weird too. So I'm like, you know, it's been a thing, but I'll show you guys something fun really fast.
Yeah, please. And Corey, have you used metahuman animator at all with Blue?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to show you. I've been using metahuman animator a lot for some of my other characters, but it looks amazing, but none of them are sort of new metahumans. So I don't have any sense of what they would look like otherwise. But let's see, Xanadu. This is all stuff that I was
Very organized. I'm jealous.
This is stuff I was sending to some of the metahuman peeps, but check this out. Let me know. Do you guys hear this sound? Hang on.
Because, well, there's a lot of
stuff. Yes.
You do? Okay. So I'm going to hopefully be able to talk over a little bit.
Okay, yeah, it's not too loud.
This is Blue metahuman creator.
It's the Ed Norton character.
This is using Mesh Morpher, and then this is ARKit, obviously.
Yeah, we're doing a little bit of a test. He just talking normal.
But the interesting thing is you get a lot of the juice of a real metahuman rig versus this one. But when he starts doing like all of his expressions,
here we go.
There's a lot with the eyes and with the way Blue smiles.
And
actually, that's not really a good example.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, yeah. We're just talking big this time.
So there's the thing I realized is that the AR kit, because it's so limited, it was able to achieve this, I think, a very concentrated personality. Like he definitely breaks human parameters as far as his big mouth, his big smile. But trying to get that to happen with the metahuman rig has been really challenging, like to get the smiles to match, to get the frowns to match. And even though you can make those shapes happen, it's not until Mesh Morpher has been able to integrate the data into the DNA asset that it's become possible for it to actually work. So hopefully in the next couple of weeks, I'll have a metahuman animator version of Blue that looks right. If that makes sense, it doesn't have all these oddities and like, you know, discrepancies between some of the other shapes.
The mouth is so different on the metahuman one.
Yeah.
The mouth is the big one, and the eyes to some degree.
But the eyes, I feel like I could deal with and make it work. But the mouth is just like, you know, Blue's got this very unique thing. And again, this is picking up a lot of and almost amplifying a lot of my asymmetries. So I've got to figure out a few different things. But and it made me appreciate ARKit in a way, because I feel like it's you know, it's got its limitations, of course, but it, considering how far this character goes back in time, it was able to, like, you know, these two things don't seem completely out of the ballpark in terms of quality, you know?
We do as Blue. What's up? That's not Blue's voice, but whatever. I think that's about it.
It's like stylized ARKit, and like Apple's like smoothed out a lot of the curves and like...
Yeah.
The eye gaze won't be like as like async if you go like pure ARKit. It's like more stylized.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Whereas like MetaHuman Creator, it's like it's taking like every single thing about your face and it's like putting it on there. It's like
I totally get what you mean by a person wearing like the character on their face. Like looking at this
guy.
Yeah. Exactly. It looks like someone who is like cosplaying the person on the right.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is the base mesh should pretty much match, right? Because I used Blue's mesh, but because it's using all the expressions from the regular MetaHuman, that's what it would look like. It just kind of threw me because the funny thing is I spent so much time to try to get Blue onto this MetaHuman rig. In hindsight, I know had I succeeded, it would have looked like the guy on the left and I would have been like crushed. But now it's sort of like, okay, at least I can get across the finish line with these with MeshMorpher. I just have to go back and do it. I was going to try to find this. You're commenting on my organization, but I'm like, fuck is this other file? Because I've been making a bunch of other characters, and the other thing I found that was really interesting is FaceGood. I don't know if you guys are familiar. They make like a face capture system. I've been playing around with their thing, and it's kind of a weird middle ground between ARKit and MetaHuman Animator, but in a good way for me with Blue, because it doesn't deal with all the asymmetry aspects and it's real time, which is something is super critical for my pipeline. So that might be something I end up adapting.
It just sold.
What do you mean?
It's good sold to... Animatrix, I believe, like the mocap company.
Oh, damn.
I believe.
Does that mean no more FaceGood?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they're going to resell it or if it's like the, you know, what happened with like 2K and Dynamics. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Ziva Dynamics and all that.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of heart-wrenching in a sense because, yeah, Jello's been hooking me up with all their stuff. And
yeah, I have one over there. Like,
yeah, me too. Yeah. Real quick though, let's pretend it's going to keep going. Corey, both of you, are you using the tethered version of FaceGood, or are you finding that the Android app is sufficient?
I'm not using the Android app. I'm using the tethered version, at least for testing. I haven't like gotten into it beyond testing, so I doubt I'd use the Android version of it because it's a little like, I don't know.
It's only if you need to move around a lot. Otherwise, yeah, I would go tethered as well.
Yeah.
And I wish Cubic came out with a camera. I know that they're...
Yeah, come on.
We can't really talk about it, but like, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I know, right? You would think by now there would be something there. This is an example of... This super work in progress.
Okay. So we're doing a test.
But this is FaceGood live.
And this is FaceGood running on a separate machine, which really helps a lot. And it's coming into a MetaHuman... And it's using live drive. So this is technically a live signal that I'm recording in Take Recorder just to play it back on various characters and to see overall how it looks kind of.
So, I mean, this is a quick version of it for me. So I know with some time I could get it a lot better looking.
The eyes look awesome though.
Yeah.
Is everything rendered with the path tracer?
No, this is just regular rendering.
Well, someone posted online the three lateral trick for like rendering depth of field with grooms recently.
One thing I did notice
Oh, is there a trick for getting that to be better?
Yeah. Forget his name. I can find it, but yeah, it's, I think it's like a CVAR and something else. It's only for like offline rendering though. You can't use it for like games.
Yeah. And then I guess I'll show you guys one other, or a couple other characters. I've been going to town with Mesh Morpher because it's just so fun. This is a new character. He's full metahuman, mesh morphed, and then metahuman animator.
My name is Zen, and very much in love with the universe, with life.
And I'm just talking in a sense.
Absolute genius.
What are you saying?
Behind everything.
Like, oh, this is so good.
The truth itself, the complexity, the beauty, the harmony.
But it looks, I mean, it's like, you know, the quality of the animation and metahuman animator to me is just unbelievable.
And
yeah, I love the little details with the tongue. You get like all the little vising movements in there.
Yeah.
It's also meaningful to me to express it because
yeah,
I love it so much. Like,
and then I know, Alex, you'll know. I'm like, I have to throw one of the babies in there just to see what it looks like. And of course, it looks, whoa, that's not the right one.
That one looked like a Gen AI face. I need to see it moving.
So this is
pretty hilarious. So here we are. We're doing a basic facial animation test where I'm just initially talking normally. And this isn't going way more animated and way more into character because it's so much cooler. And that's what we do. At least that's what we used to do because we had to in order to get AR kit to, you know, perform at a normal level.
So anyways, these guys came out pretty awesome, I thought.
Yeah.
So good.
I mean, with almost no work at all. I literally just threw the models in there.
And it weighs.
And spit it out.
Oh, with the mesh to metahuman?
Using Mesh Morpher to create the metahuman. Mesh Morpher. And then just using MetaHuman Animator to do it. And then I kind of got this guy a little bit more fleshed out.
So here we are, we're doing a basic facial animation.
I've been using 11th Labs to come up with these voices, which I've been loving too, because I'm tired of like the two voices that I can do with Chatterbox and Blue. But with 11 Labs, you can, like, I can make my voice sound like somebody else, which is cool.
I'm getting overly animated in a sense. I would be talking about the laws of the universe.
This looks awesome.
So good.
Comes together.
So I'm gonna do some TikTok videos with these guys or something fun.
World needs this.
I'm a bit afraid to use 11. Can you use 11 Labs for commercial work?
I don't know. Is that a sketchy thing? Probably is, huh?
Any of the AI stuff, it's like 11 is perfect for like animators. I mean, it's like, but the actors are on strike right now over this, you know, so it's like, I mean, we're solo, but still, like, I don't know.
But I think some of the voices, I'm curious. I'll have to look into that.
It is good though. It's compelling. Cause like, I don't want to do the voices either. I've done there's only so much I can do with like, you know, like little pitch stuff like that, but like 11 would be good. I just need it to be like, signed off that this is legal and we're all set to use this and I'm not going to, like, you know, game dev prison for using 11.
I wonder how they would find out.
I don't know. It's just a question. Like, I know a lot of people that are Gen AI and like all the 3D assets, like all of them. And I'm like, what about the legality of it? They're like, we're fucking shipping. And I was like, okay, then, you know, I mean, that's what it is. Like, and they're fine. They look fine.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, how did that work out for like actual commercial projects? And yeah, what will be the backlash, if any, from that? We'll see soon.
Yeah. I mean, I have friends that work at like Hulu, which is now owned by Disney, and they're not allowed to use Gen AI for anything at all, period, no matter what it is. Even though I know some of them that still do, but it's kind of wild that they're not taking any chances.
Well, they have a lot to lose.
Yeah. This could also be a great podcast episode on itself. Just, you know, the legality and creative capabilities and what's the right way to go about all this stuff. Because, yeah, it's an incredible opportunity for anyone, especially a solo dev, to do as much as they can. But anytime it's like, oh, but that could have been someone else's job, then you're in a kind of a different territory.
people are just doing it. I mean, just gonna stop being. The big studios with like legal, you know, things to worry about, but like on the indie small cut, they're just going full steam ahead. It's like, yeah, they're going on for a while, like a while. Like you'll see stuff on TV and it's like, oh, I know that one. I know those ones where definitely.
Yeah. All right. We are wrapping up. I do want to give a chance for just a couple more UE tips just to send off our audience who stuck with us so far and anything else that might help their daily workflow. Jacob, Matt, anyone else have anything they want to share real quick?
Just show the frog game. Or what's the animal? What's the animal?
Yeah, Flo, I mean, I'll definitely add in more videos afterwards and post, but do you want to do a quick screen share of your amazing frog game?
Oh, yeah, sure. Excellent. Let me fire up my fresh build that I did. Where did I put it? Put it on my desktop.
Animated in Blender.
Later, Melvin.
I did. I'm not an animator, so it's very rough, but sure. I did what I could.
Rhythm frogs.
Do you hear the music?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Ah, spoilers. Here, let me try this again. Because the music is quite nice. How does it share?
Sure, audio is a checkbox, right?
Yeah.
Share sounds. Yeah, I see it.
Very good.
Got it. That is not.
Yeah, working on my settings and my menus. Turn the music down.
There you go.
The sound effects. That's better. I don't know if it'll save yet. I think that's something I need to adjust.
What are the inputs? What are you doing?
Right now I have it set to my keyboard, just the arrows. The arrow keys.
It doesn't work with the RJ cabinet.
Yeah, I set it up to work with the gamepad as well, so it does work. Right now I'm working on setting up my menus with the gamepad inputs as well.
Yeah. It sounds like it's compatible with DDR pad.
Just think I'm a therapeutic animal.
Oh, I'm so glad you think so.
Ask, like, if you got pilot flights in your head, like how fast, how many frogs came out of the screen?
Where did the incredibly lovely relaxing music come from, Flo?
I have credits for the musicians that I downloaded this from.
Nice.
Yeah, I downloaded it from a website. I wish I remembered the name.
Yeah.
But I'll let you know if you can put it in your podcast, because the music is so nice that I do want to credit the musicians.
Yeah, we do show notes, so anything else we want to give links to, we'll definitely.
Oh, perfect. Level complete. Only 8 croaks this time.
Ship it now.
There you go. Yeah, I have a credit section.
Yeah. Well, I feel like this game would have helped a lot of people during the pandemic. Just.
Yeah, really good. I'm supposed to feel relaxed now.
Valve, yeah.
Thanks for saying that. Yeah, something I learned from the fellowship, I probably should have stuck with one of the templates to make my life a little easier, but I was a little stubborn this time around and really wanted to make a rhythm game because I grew up playing in the arcades. Like, I spent a lot of quarters and a lot of hours on DDR. And I played a lot of Guitar Hero and a lot of DS rhythm games, like Rhythm Heaven. It just holds a really special place in my heart. Yeah, what I got.
Do you have one class playing all of the sound effects so that you can like control the volume on the slider?
Yes, I made classes for the music and a class for the sound effects. And I want to put an option in the settings where I can make another class with like a master volume slider so it can affect both.
And then how do you get your events to like the sound effects class? You just like, because like you're hitting like the frog and to descend it, like every sound effect is played by like that one class.
Ideally, yes. So it's not entirely working right now, which is something I'm working on. But yeah, as you witnessed before, it worked in the settings menu, but once I hit play, the music and the sound effects went back to max volume. So something I need to adjust.
All right.
I'm doing something similar. I like never do sound for my games, but like this one has like some sound in it. I usually just throw the sound everywhere. So I'm like, is there like a global variable that we're pulling from that they all have to hear about? And then if they go in the menu and they change it, like how does it get reported back? I know I've been trying to figure out a nice pattern for that myself.
Yeah, I'll let you know if I figure that out.
Great. I love the sharing going on here. We all have something to give to the rest of the community.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say like one more thing that I wish I knew about before starting this project was pulling events from the sequencer. If I had known that earlier, I think a lot of my froggies would be exactly on beat because I did some manual math for that, which was really hard.
Are you talking about using the event track or how would you trigger events from the sequencer in your case?
Yeah, so I like what we discussed early on, just looking on the marketplace to see what was already out there. Mm. And there's this bass rhythm game where somebody used the sequencer and you put in your music that you want and you can clearly see where the beats are and you can keyframe those beats and then call events on those keys, on those keyframes. So that's what I want to try next when I build my second level, because I want players to be able to choose their songs and I have another one lined up. So that's going to be my experiment, my little pet project after this.
Excellent. All right. If no one else has a quick UE tip to share, I might close with a fun little thing about OSC. Maybe. So OSC is great. It stands for Open Sound Control, but it's not just for sound. It was kind of a successor to MIDI, because MIDI was a little bit more limited with what you could do with it. This kind of circles back to the earlier conversation about when you're using tools that are outside of Unreal Engine. And there's a lot of different pieces of software out there, QLab, TouchOSC, a million others, that use OSC as a protocol to send data. So if you've got other software and you want to have that talk to Unreal Engine or have Unreal Engine talk to that other software, OSC is a really great way to go about it. And in addition to just sending integers, float values, strings, whatever kind of data you might need to have go back and forth, what we started to find as my company was doing more and more with multiplayer was in some cases you could actually use OSC instead of multiplayer, like a totally headless system, no server, nothing like that. I'll give one concrete example. We did an off-Broadway show a couple years ago with Mikhail Brishnikov and Jessica Hecht based on Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard. And we had a live physical audience at the Brishnikov Art Center and a virtual audience that was all around the world using our Unreal Engine digital twin of the experience. And we realized that we needed a lot of synchronicity between what was happening at the physical venue as well as the virtual venue. And we were trying to figure out, like, if we've got 1,000 people who come to the show, how do we make that work with multiplayer and all that? And we ultimately realized that because of the limited number of things that everyone needed to see at the same time, we could literally just use OSC to like send the same cue. Like one OSC signal could go to the physical venue and that same OSC signal could go to all the Unreal Engine instances who could then trigger a thing, which made everyone feel like they were in multiplayer and having the same experience at the same time, but none of the actual complexity of multiplayer. So I'll show just a really quick example of that. And then where everyone's being so wonderful, hanging out for so long, we will sign off shortly. And shout out to Marshall, who put together this example. Marshall from Agile Lens, still in the chat. So TouchOSC is one example of a piece of software you can use. There's, you know, a desktop version here. This is me on my phone. And so I was about to show this in Prague and then moved on to other things because I was moving as fast as I could. But we just have a quick little example here of, you know, a really simple little layout of different kinds of buttons and sliders and whatnot. And if I go ahead and I press play here, all I'm doing here is I'm talking to Unreal Engine. I'm just telling it that there's an IP address here. And if I go to the correct thing over here, play, and I go over to where we've got our TouchOSC, our OSC example, this is a way that we can talk to Unreal. So here's our really simple little OSC blueprint, and it's just a cube. But you'll see that if I bring over my my phone over here, I can actually control something happening in Unreal Engine with however this is mapped. And of course, you would tell Unreal Engine what to do with this data. But we've got like some different cube colors here. We've got a thing to change the scale. But, you know, those are just a few examples. You could do anything. You could be firing things that are going to happen in Sequencer. You could do a rhythm game from another application that somehow then works in Unreal Engine. And it can be a two-way street. And the way you set that up is relatively simple. I'll just show the blueprint very quickly. So you have an OSC client, which is a little confusing if you're used to multiplayer, because that is more like a server. You're saying like, here's a thing that can receive data. And then you can just, you know, use the standard kinds of variables you're used to. Everything uses this kind of directory format of like, here's kind of a parent folder and a subfolder sort of thing. As you send the data, in this case, it's a float, you put these in bundles or packages or messages, and then it all just sends along. So you can see here very briefly that we've got, you know, these different ways that we're using the data as it comes in. We've got a switch on string here for anything related to color or scale or YZ, and then we just trigger kind of these different events and pull it apart. You basically have an OSC message that can have a ton of different data in it, and you just grab whatever you need from it and do whatever you want in Unreal Engine. So OSC, if you haven't played with it before, really cool way to talk to other applications. Might replace multiplayer for you, and it's as easy as just hitting that checkbox on OSC Open Sound Control. Also noting, if you play with any of the remote control stuff, there is also remote control protocol for OSC, which is great for, say, virtual production and some of the ways you might be talking to, you know, lighting systems and that kind of stuff. Though in that situation, you might also be using DMX. Anyway, starting to ramble. So I'll end that there. I hope that's useful to at least a few listeners. OSC thing.
Do you know how to get a Windows local IP in Unreal Engine?
You know, Matt, my favorite thing about pixel streaming isn't just the fact that it actually does pixel streaming. It's the fact that it actually shows you your local IP address right here. Oh, wait, I'm not sharing my screen. Hold on.
Is there a blueprint for it? Or do we have to go and see and dig around?
You know, I don't. I'm sure you could do it in a blueprint format or pull it apart in the pixel streaming blueprint. But if you've got a server running, right down here, so this is giving me my local host, of course, and then this is where I am as an IPv4 address right here in the pixel streaming dropdown.
Well, that's a weird one. I mean, at runtime, like if you're running like a packaged game, can you get it?
Yeah, Marshall, if you're listening right now, I know there's another like separate blueprint we've been using for this. There we go. Yeah, we made a super simple C++ plugin that does exactly
that. It's like the network.
Yeah. Marshall, is that on our free Agile Lens utility nodes GitHub? Is that something we can share to the public? Hasn't been updated in a while. Okay, but let's update it. Because I think, yeah, as Matt's kind of alluding to, there's a lot of people that would love just an easy way at runtime to get their local IP address of whoever's using their computer.
My current game, some of like the really high-end wheels, they report their OSC, and it's like, I have to tell the users, like, just look up your local IP. That's not a humongous pain in the ass for Mac users. They know how to do that, right? Like, they don't. It's like, every time, it's like a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah. Fantastic. All right. Well, we're coming up, or we have already hit 3 hours. What a wonderful supersize episode. Thanks so much. We've got 11 people left here who stuck it out through the entire chat. Really, really grateful for all of you coming by to help us end our season on a big high note. And as we start to plan our next season, we're going to pull a lot of you back for standalone episodes and some of these really excellent topics that we only touched on here. So, you know, to everyone here, to everyone listening, thank you so much for your support. Thanks for being part of the Unreal Engine community. You all inspire us. We all inspire each other. The rising tide raises all boats. I hope everyone has a wonderful end of summer. We hope to see a lot of you at Unreal Fest. And thank you. Anyone else have any closing words?
Like, comment, subscribe, awesome.
And also we suddenly have like a billion social media channels. So you can find this podcast now on everything, on just everything. And the handle now on TikTok, it's UE Podcast, because surprisingly the other one was taken, which we're using, which is Unoff Unreal Pod. Totally unrelated to Unreal. Someone else is using that on TikTok, but everywhere else, Unoff Unreal Pod. Great. Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful night. Cheers.
See you guys.
Thanks, guys.